Here's the logic I use. I don't know anything that works better when the government gets involved. Can you name anything? 860-522-9842. And it's not just because it's the government. It's also because you need markets in order to sort out what's best. Markets are democracy. Elections are markets. What the founders did when they created this country was create a market-based society politically and economically. When we have elections, we're better off than if the government tells us who the next leader is going to be. And when we go to the restaurant we prefer, that's better than having to go to the government restaurant where they serve American chop suey like you had when you were a kid. The best things come from a vibrant, competitive marketplace. Tom in Harwinton, how you doing, Tom? Oh, wait a sec. Sorry. I didn't push the right button here. Let me try it again. Hello, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi. I'd like to ask a question of any, the uber leftist listening. If, quote-unquote, white privilege is such a scourge in our society, why did Liz Warren, why did her career skyrocket after she started declaring herself a Native American?
Well, I think the honest answer would be because she knew she was operating in the place where the left has the system rigged to favor people not on their performance, but instead on their ethnic or racial makeup. And that's why she decided to scam that system. She got hired by Harvard, which bragged about her to the federal government that they were all excited because they had their first woman of color. And they put on their federal filings for equal opportunity employment that they had her as a minority. Right. It's so bizarre that anyone allows her to get away with this on the left, especially herself.
But she can totally pass as white, so why didn't she use her white privilege?
Yeah, well, it's a good point, but she doesn't live in a world of white privilege. I mean, I know that's the point you want to make. She lives in a world controlled by the left, so we can see how they want the world to be, what their vision is. Their vision is you don't get the job because you're the best applicant. You get the job because you're posing the best as somebody who deserves special treatment, having suffered for your ethnicity or other reason.
Well said. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Good point. And a true one at that. Thank you, Thomas. 860-522-9842. It's amazing what we've been led into and the people go along. People buy the idea this is a compassionate system. The left is pushing compassion. They want you to be able to get a job by pretending to be a quote unquote American Indian, which is that's how Liz Warren termed it. It's WTIC. All right, we've got some space here to talk, so hop on the phone and let's do it. Let's do it. 860-522-9842. Let's talk about all these issues. The left is out to get us. They are determined, and their system is one in which it doesn't matter how much they ruin things. They keep coming back with the same argument. They do it for love. They do it for compassion. They do it with empathy. They just love us so much, they have to destroy us. And I don't think they're worried about what they destroy and how bad it gets, because they'll just keep coming back with the same argument and keep pulling the wool over the same people's eyes. Or they'll be paying people enough. Part of it is very practical. They'll be paying people enough to make sure they keep winning their votes. 860-522-WTIC. Mike, hi. You're on with Todd.
Hi. So I just wanted to, sometimes I think when we discuss these things, we only present, one perspective based on what fits with what our side is. And I just think, and I'm a history teacher, at the time of FDR, when he was talking about all these programs, we have to remember that corporations at that time were involved in child labor, sweatshops. The whole reason that people unionized was to, you know, get minimal rights in these places. There was
Mike, why did this movement of the government, why did they make laws to take power out of the hands of the people and put it in the hands of these special interests called unions? Why didn't make a law saying you can't employ somebody under the age of X?
Well, what I'd say is I would agree with you that the union pendulum has swung too far, but we have to remember that these corporations, back in the time when unions were formed, were taking advantage of their workers. And without government intervention, they didn't have safety regulations.
Okay, so answer my question, though, because I'm curious about this. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but since you're a history guy, I never understood why the government didn't just make a law. That's all they have to do is make a law. You can't employ people younger than the age of this.
Well,
they didn't have to create this.
It's for the same reason right now. It's because most of the people who govern us are not governing for us. They're governing for the big money, the corporations, the people with all the money that can buy them.
But that doesn't make sense, since these same governments made laws authorizing unions.
Well, again, unions aren't authorized by the government. They're authorized by our Constitution and our right to assemble, which is in the First Amendment.
Well, assembling is different. No. There's a whole Federal Labor Relations Board. There's a whole system of laws that empower unions to do certain things. If you didn't have these laws that have nothing to do with the right to assemble, this is the right to rig. They have the right to rig the system.
But again, what we're talking about is we're not talking about one side which is evil and one side which is good. We're talking about both sides taking advantage of whatever part of the system they can to win.
I'm not disputing that. I'm not disputing that. But one side is defending. One side is defending jobs. Well, because the whole rest of America is conspiring to make it seem that all these things that are unconstitutional and un-American are normal, that they somehow are American values, when the things that the founders stood for, the things that are written down in the Constitution, which doesn't include unions, those things are...
No, but it's the right to assemble.
The right to assemble doesn't require government authorization. It's right there in the Constitution already.
Yeah, you're right. So we should be able to have unions without government authorization.
No, we can make a non-governmental union. These are unions empowered by the government as a special interest group. Do you think unions are a constructive entity?
I think they were. I think they've become something they weren't originally intended to do, but they absolutely promoted change in the
exactly.
time they were
so
created.
We're in agreement on this. They weren't intended to be things to destroy the state of Connecticut, for example, economically.
But also,
and that's the result. No, wait a sec. This is why they're unconstitutional things. This is why they passed. Tell us the history, since you're a historian, of FDR threatening to pack the court in order to get some of this stuff that was blatantly unconstitutional approved by the court.
And he should not have been allowed to do that, just like Mitch McConnell should not have been allowed not to do his job for a year and a half when Obama chose his judge for the Supreme Court. And that's what I'm trying to say, that both sides of the aisle play this like it's a monopoly game.
Well, I disagree with your example, but I agree with your premise. We're in agreement. One side rigs it in favor of what the founders intended. The other has been spending the last 100 years trying to dismantle.
In the Constitution, it says that the purpose of government is to provide all of us, and this is in the preamble, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Exactly.
Many of our people for many years have been tramped. You talk about education. I'm a teacher. I teach in an inner city school. If you really want these kids to grow up and compete for jobs, then you need to spend more money on them to give them the resources.
That's ridiculous.
To achieve.
Amount of money we pay is astronomical compared to historical standards, and we can't.
Rich districts to poor districts. If you compare city districts to suburban districts, the suburban districts always
get more
Mike,
money for the
Mike, hold on 1 minute. I want to finish up with you after traffic and weather if you'd be patient enough to wait. 860-522-9842. So, Mike, listen to this. Was that Mike I was talking to? It was, right? Yeah. Listen to FDR's Second Bill of Rights. This is where he argues for an agenda that would undo the Bill of Rights in the Constitution.
Among these are the right to a useful and remunerative job, the right to earn enough to provide adequate food and clothing and recreation, the right of every farmer to raise and sell his products at a return which will give him and his family a decent living, the right of every businessman, large and small, to trade in an atmosphere of freedom, freedom from unfair competition and domination by monopolies at home or abroad.
All right, so that's part of FDR's argument, which is basically for a system other than the one we are supposed to live under. And what this indicates is this movement to dismantle the American system has been going on for a long, long time. This was back in the 1930s, FDR said this. Mike dropped, unfortunately. 860-522-9842. And Dave is in Burlington. Hi, Dave.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. Thanks for the call.
Hey, so anyway, I want to just kind of piggyback off of Mike. I guess he got dropped or something. But
he hung
I'm
up,
also
yeah.
I'm also a teacher. I'm an elementary teacher in a suburban district locally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I also do a lot of work with students and families from diverse backgrounds. I mean, the community that I work in is one that's become, you know, progressively more diverse over the years. And I have to tell you, I mean, just I've been teaching for 14 years and seeing, the types of students and the backgrounds that they're walking through the door with. You know, he talked a little bit about, you know, he works in an inner city.
What's the point you want to make, though?
The point I want to make is that, you know, we're talking about the system being rigged and, you know, on both sides of the aisle and in favor of, in favor of side left or side right or whatever. But the bottom line is it all starts with, you know, if we're trying to really, truly level the playing field for folks that haven't had opportunities, you really do need to start with providing more money to schools in inner cities.
The trouble with the premise, first of all, is there has not been established that I've seen a correlation between educational results and the amount of money spent per year. And I have this wonderful piece of sound. I don't know if you've ever heard me play it of Governor Malloy saying last year in a sit down with the Hartford Current that every single penny of additional revenues coming into the state government in Connecticut since 2011, that's two of the biggest increases in the history of the state included in there. Every single cent has gone not to any particular program, but to pay for the post-employment benefits of state workers. When you create a system in which politicians run around and say, oh, we have to spend more money on education, but every new dollar that comes in is just sucked in by this huge vacuum of the destruction done to the state by this rigged system of public sector unions and their partners, the Democratic Party, it's meaningless. You can raise taxes indefinitely and keep asking for more revenue for the schools. It just goes to pay people who don't work anymore.
Well, I mean, I think that's why, you know, as a state, we really seems that the ball is rolling on taking a look at some of these entitlements and some of these.
As
you know,
a state, no, it's rolling buyouts. It's rolling in the other direction. The current lot in Hartford.
I respectfully disagree. You want to look at some of these towns and some of these cities. They really are looking at, doing buyouts and things like that of folks. I mean, I know that the state is hamstrung for a couple more years with regard to not being able to do anything for their employees. But I mean, other states have been successful with this.
The state is the new government in Hartford is trying to figure out how to protect the unions, to try to make sure that whatever happens, the fix is new revenues, new taxes on the people of Connecticut, not a repair of the CBAC agreements, not any buyouts. They're not talking about any of that stuff. I don't know what you're paying attention to. There may be cities and towns who are trying to do things to save themselves. Mostly what the state is planning on doing is raising taxes and then attacking the municipalities by shifting costs onto them.
But isn't there a system in place where new state workers over the past, I don't even know how many years.
New state workers get paid less. But meanwhile, every year, starting with this year at $1.5 billion, the interest payment, the unfunded problem. Every year for, I think, the next 8 years, that goes up astronomically. So the state is in a situation without a real leader who's going to stand up and say, we have to do something about the deals we made with state workers because it's unsustainable. It can't be paid. The fact that, first, those deals were made, and second, that they were unfunded for the last several decades, means that it's impossible to pay those debts. And that, if you don't hear that coming out of the mouth of Governor Malloy, then what he's doing is selling us out. He's looking to kick the can down the road, and it keeps getting worse.
Well, by the way, it's Governor Lamont.
I'm sorry, same difference.
But
thank
but,
you. Though.
But I have to tell you, regardless of whether or not that's going to happen the way that you're saying it's going to happen, regardless of that, you're talking about, you know, the future of our state and the future of our society. It's just going to continue. The gulf is going to continue to widen.
Which
gulf? And I'm coming from an educational point of view, mm-hmm. between the students that are basically being left to rot and falling apart inner city schools.
Well, wait a sec. Those are controlled. Those schools are controlled by the Democratic Party and their union partners. And what they've done is given control of the schools over to the unions. All policy is made by.
I don't think that that's the case. I think that the union is a subset of the costs associated with education, but it's certainly not what.
Well, what I'm saying is they control education policy. Tell me a policy that is an automatic standard wrap of the education industry in this country that isn't one that plays right into the wants and needs of the education unions.
Well, I'm not a historian of education.
No, right now. I'm saying I don't think there's a fight that goes on. And there are, to be fair, there are Democrats who realize that education is a victim of the union relationship, and they advocate, but nobody in the government takes it up. The government has handed over authority for the schools. So we need to get rid of the public sector unions controlling the schools. They should be non-unionized. And the way we get there is by creating a competitive school environment. So like everything else that works in our society, the parents have a piece of paper in their hand worth their $11,000 or $12,000 that they can take to any school. Until we do that,
are you advocating vouchers seriously? After all the data that's available about how they're not working,
the schools, the public schools, don't work. You just described how agonizing it is to try to run a school in our society, especially when you want to let millions of people come in from other countries who don't speak the language and stuff.
But that's not the fault of the system. We just have to educate what's in front of us, sir.
Well, that's from your point of view as an educator, but from the point of view of the people who make the policy, the same people arguing who made the partnership with the unions that have destroyed the state of Connecticut and destroyed the schools, those same people are arguing you got to keep. They've got a proposal. They're the fight right now with Trump. We have to talk about. They want to make sure that Trump doesn't have a place. Well, I'm out of time. We'll talk more about it coming up. 860-522-9842. WTIC. By the way, the biggest country, somebody earlier was pulling out the old Scandinavian country example. The biggest country in terms of population is Sweden, I think, with 10 million, followed by Switzerland with 8.5. And the smallest one is Iceland with 340,000 people. These are the countries they pull out of their hats to show that socialism can work beautifully. And I'm sure it can under very unique circumstances, but the world would suffer if America was imitating those systems, because America's vibrance as an economy is what drives most of the world's economy. 860-522-WTIC. So the move to socialism is not just harmful for Americans and will hurt the standard of living. Here it'll hurt the standard of living for the whole world. Not that that's our responsibility, but it's important to keep in mind. Greg calling from Torrington. Hi.
Hello, Todd. How are you?
What's on your mind, Greg? I'm good.
I'm calling a couple callers back, reliving the history of unions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my opinion that unions back then were good. They started out just like government, we the people, for the people, but now they've become the big business for the big business.
Well, wait a second. I thought they'd improve because they were kind of gangster organizations back then that went out and did violence on, you know, attacked the companies they worked for, attacked the workers who came in, the scabs, as they called them.
That's true. But originally, I believe they all started out, they you know.
Well, what you're saying is there was a noble purpose in terms of the marketing for the purposes of unions. But my complaint is that it's something that's blatantly unconstitutional to require people to join what the previous caller called a right of free association. It was required of workers and still is in many states to join organizations to represent them that they have no interest in or they have contempt in. How can that be an appropriate thing to do in a free society?
I agree with you 100% because I'm not for unions.
Okay.
I worked in a I was a facility manager for a public school system, and what I've seen could make you sick.
Okay, but since we have the advantage of hindsight, we can look back now and say, okay, all of these socialist things that the left has been pushing perpetually for the last 100 years turn out bad. And so we can look at them and say, okay, why didn't we just obey our own constitution, which said unions are unconstitutional, instead of allowing them because at that moment maybe they would create some good, and over the long term they've driven the state of Connecticut into bankruptcy.
You know, like I have a brother-in-law that is retired from the Teamsters Union. The Teamsters, through his union dues, supplies his health benefits, mm-hmm. supplies his retirement, and everything else. Nowadays, you pay union dues, and the company supplies your health benefits.
So even the union's, you know, not doing as well. I'm sorry, Greg. I've got to run because I have to get to a traffic update. But thank you for the call and thanks for making the points. 860-522-9842. Yeah. It's WTIC. Having a fun conversation. I sometimes yell and scream about this because it means a lot to me, but don't ever take it personally, especially if we're arguing, because I love the arguments the best, and I think they're the most important thing we do. Sharik is joining us, a regular caller now, Sharik. I appreciate it.
Hi, how are you, sir?
Good.
Mr. Feinberg, I know you're fired up, Rebe, and me too a little bit. The thing is, I do not agree with you on the unions thing, is that you're trying to portray them as some kind of a corrupt organization which should be almost prosecuted again for, you know, using RICO or something like that. That's not the thing.
I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is the system that allows them to exist is,
so you know, right now,
is unlawful in our country.
Unions are the weakest in the United States in almost 50 years. You
know? Yes, and still Connecticut has been made bankrupt.
I'll take the case of Connecticut. You never mentioned one thing. You never mentioned the givebacks by the state unions in the context of Connecticut budget and all that.
No, that only reinforces my point. Even with the givebacks, we are still being destroyed financially by the deals that they got.
Years and years.
The whole entire debt problem in the state is because unions exist first, which there's no purpose for them. The public sector unions have no reason to exist except to rig elections. That's all they're good for.
That's not correct.
Well, tell me the benefit public sector unions have provided to the average citizen.
They stop, they stop, as far as the, you know, one of your caller calls that to stop the abuses in the, you know, after the great crash of 1929, and that's what the New Deal came about, basically.
No, that I'm talking about public sector unions.
No, I know public sector unions. My point is, in the state per se, in Connecticut, when I work for the state, they are the buffer between the management and the employees and the staff.
Yeah, and the result of that buffer is we're bankrupt.
No, I don't think so. There are like a lot of factors. What about the 2008 crash, which was not caused by the unions, but caused by the banks, the private sector, the banks, the mortgage companies, this and that. I'm not against anybody. I'm not against. They're all part of the system.
In the years since the crash, the stock market has been bubbling along at historically fine rates, and the rigged system of the unions and the Democrats has led to an overestimating of what their investment dollars would bring back, and because the governments have never funded the liability created by this partnership between the Democrats and the unions, the benefits of those investments haven't been what they were supposed to be anyway. The state's just been dismantled, Sherrick, by this cozy relationship between the Democrats and the unions. And having a partnership like that with a special interest group, a political party that says, we put this special interest group for, this is nothing against workers. This is about politicians who created
unions are workers too. They are workers too. I mean, you know.
No, the entity of a union is not a worker. It is a special interest created by government, especially public sector unions. And they provide no benefit, only destruction to the people who pay the bills in the state. Let's get Bill in South Windsor. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Todd. How you doing? Let me get my phone off of speaker.
Yeah, please do.
Hey, bye.
I love when you get your phone off of speaker.
Oh, I got you.
Good.
Hey, the only thing that bothers me about the whole thing is that the underfunding of all these pensions, and granted, they were terrible ideas, and it was the Democrats making these huge pensions, but the bottom line is, it's our government people that we elected that did fund these programs.
Yes.
So now we're going to take potentially people that have been retired for 20 years and to fix the problem. What are we going to do, Ben?
I don't know. I'm hopeful that first this gets addressed in an honest way, not in a way that continues the contempt for taxpayers that the Democrats favor. And second, that workers can be kept whole. But we can't even begin to discover that if we don't have an honest conversation. There are people with ideas about how you can adjust things and make only minor changes that allow workers to stay whole. And that would obviously be the outcome everybody would want.
Well, it's going to have to be a tiered system where the people that are getting the huge pensions that built them up over the last 3 years that are working, and those are all the cronies from the Democrats. That's all their buddies, all the top guys.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the high end of it has to be capped as part of these kinds of deals, but something has to be done. You can't ruin the state in perpetuity so that this thing can stay the way it is. At the same time, I agree with you. You don't want to see people who've been depending on a retirement get harmed.
And there's thousands of people in that situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's a tough situation. But it requires honest and tough leadership. And I don't know if we have either of that in the Capitol. 860-522-WTIC. Thank you for your calls on this. Let's continue after traffic and weather together on the 8s. Yeah, I'm worked up, so you're going to hear me yelling and stuff more because I favor people calling to defend the current system if that's what you believe. So please feel free on that. However, I think the main thing I want you not to do is to deny the reality of where we are and pretend that it's not about. And by the way, I blame unions less than the Democratic Party, which created unions for this purpose. If you look back, I'm sure you've heard that Democrats argued that there was no place for public sector unions. I think FDR did that, didn't he? That there was no need and no place for public sector unions. But the opportunity to create a special interest in partnership with a political party was just too glorious for them to pass up. The main thing is, we never should have had an FDR twisting things up into a socialist mess. And that's that all started with him. 860-522-WTIC. All right, finally we got to you, Nancy. I'm excited to hear what you have to say from Farmington. Hi. Hello, Nancy.
Hi.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I just wanted to expand on the Sweden. Everybody keeps referring to Sweden as socialist country and, you know, they pay for everything. They did do that. They used to be one of the strongest financial countries in Europe until they started providing health care, you know, money to the retired folks, school choice, everything. And then they ran out of money. People rose up, demanded change, and the government had to start privatizing services because they were going bankrupt. So they farmed it out, and they're pretty much, for the most part, a free market economic country at this point.
But they do have universal health care, do they not?
They do. They still pay very high taxes, but the health care is privatized. Even though it goes through the government pays the doctors and the people pay the government.
Do you have anything else, more information on the socialist experiments there?
There was a special on PBS. I forgot the gentleman's name, but he went through the entire gamut of what happened. He interviewed a lot of people who were in the unions there. Unions and union leaders respect the employers. So there's no, you know, major issues between them.
It's not like France where there's big, or Italy where there are big strikes and you don't know if you're going to be able to use the public transportation and things like that.
Correct. Exactly. They respect each other. They don't go after each other. And they come to negotiations and nobody has, for the most part, has an issue with it. And there's no minimum wage there.
Wow, that's interesting.
So it is interesting. It was a really good special. But Forbes has something on it as well.
Nancy, thanks so much for filling us in. I'm sorry, finish up.
Sure.
Did you want to finish that point?
No. I was just gonna say that they do have high taxes, but they went through the whole experiment, and it was painful for the people.
All right. It's like Connecticut. It's painful for the people here. Thank you so much. Good to hear from you. Ravi's in Manchester. Hey, Ravi.
Hi. I'm talking regarding the unions. In most of the countries, the unions were run by the different type of categories. I was a pharmacist. The pharmacists were running the pharmacist union in Sri Lanka.
So in each sector, the union is controlled by the professionals in that sector? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, by the professionals only.
And does that work better? Well, who do they negotiate with? Do the professional, like, do the pharmacists negotiate with the government over what policy is going to be for their sector?
With the government.
They do.
They negotiate with the government.
The professional people do.
Yeah.
And they don't become, you know, the sort of thing that union operators become in this country, where all they care about is manipulating for the best.
Union should be representing the different category of people. The people should be from that category.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So what Ravi is saying is that the in other countries, the unions are run by the professionals they represent rather than professional union guys, which is interesting. I don't know how you create that system, but it's not a bad idea. 860-522-9842. Joe calling from Simsbury. Hi, Joe.
Hi there. You know, Todd, I'm a little confused about this concept that gets brought up periodically having to do with the legislators not funding the pensions over the years. And the confusion I have is they obviously spent that money somewhere, probably roads, bridges, other things for the state. So I have a disconnect in my mind as to, okay, let's say that they had funded it over the years. What would we be without today in the state of Connecticut? And no one ever talks about that. It almost comes across as, oh, the poor state workers are the victims because the money wasn't put into it, but the money was spent elsewhere. So what were the, what would be those sacrifices that the state of Connecticut would no longer have that that money was spent on?
Well, it would be much better than what we don't have now, because the problem is by making the problem, you know how they talk all the time about how the state has to balance its budget every year, but they play all kinds of games to make sure the state doesn't have to balance its budget. And unions are one of them, because if you don't put the money in the bank, that's just kicking the can down the road. It's something that the bill is there, and it's an exploding bill, because if you don't have the money in the bank that you're supposed to put there, you lose out through the years on the investment dollars that money would be generating. So it's a double whammy. If you were using that money instead to pay for that and not paving a road or doing something like that, you don't have the residual costs. There's not as much damage done, and you have to deal with it in real time. It doesn't defer the payment to down the road in quite as an acute way. But I hear your point anyway. And I thank you for it, Joe. Did that answer, that make any sense to you? Joe's gone. I don't know what happened to him. Jeff in Derby. Hi, Jeff.
That was a very good question for the last caller. I've got one, too. I mentioned this a while back. Every time money is deferred and doesn't go into the union funds,
mm-hmm.
they had to sign off on it. Am I correct? They had to sign off on it to get some more benefits so they could be persuaded not to fund their own pensions. Am I correct?
Well, they should have been demanding that the state put the money away, yes.
But they didn't. So aren't they just, I mean, I'm trying to look at this legally. Everybody's been told that these contracts are ironclad. And then there were some people that were running in the Republican Party who really thought that we had a chance to go against them based on certain things. I'm not a lawyer, but my thought is this: they're complicit too. It's not like they were forced into not having their funds put in there. They agreed to it. So I think it's a moot point, because I think we've lost our chance, because we keep putting Democrats in, and they're certainly not going to go against
their
people.
Well, it just gets harder all the time. Eventually, we have to assume the crash will become acute enough, the pain will become miserable enough that people will rise up, but the sooner the better, you know?